Again, my name is Natalie and I'm an addict. I first want to thank God for everything, and then I want to welcome the newcomers. If you're new here, I'd like to say welcome to Narcotics Anonymous, let you know that you're welcome to stay, and let you know that we all started with one day and that we do recover. They've asked me to share on the sixth tradition and the sixth step, and they asked me this morning. Thank you, John. You know, my experience, you know, in the sixth tradition, they talk about us not financing or lending the NA name to any groups or outside facilities, you know. And my experience has been, because I've been to a lot of facilities that have NA meetings in them, you know, and when they refer to the meeting, rather than call it by the name, they said, oh, we're going to Ready, Willing, and Able, or wherever we're going, you know. But in this tradition, what they're talking about is if we give, if we let a residential program, an outpatient program, use the NA name, it's like endorsing their program. And if something happens to that program, like they lose their funding or something, then our name suffers from whatever happens to the program. They talked about if we were to give a dance. In this tradition, they talk about if we were to give a dance, and then like sometimes that happens, you know, because we're not perfect in here, that the TCs and all the facilities, they get a letter and they get in cheaper than everybody else, right? But in this tradition, it reminds us that if we're going to make an exception, we just make an exception for all newcomers, not just the newcomers from that specific program. So the sixth tradition is very clear. But I can share my experience and strength and hope on character defects better than anything else, because I come with a pocketbook full of character defects, you know. I came into the fellowship 14 years ago. I've been here for 14 years uninterrupted, you know, and I'm just grateful to be clean. When I came here, I was physically, mentally, spiritually, and financially bankrupt. You know, when I first started using, and I need to talk about, you know, when I was using so that the newcomer and you can get some kind of inkling of who I was when I came in here. Because they say that some of us come in here quicker, thicker, slicker. Yeah, we do. And that's just only a way of measuring all the character defects that we come in here with, you know. I came in here, I started using probably when I was 13 years old. You know, and it was just a simple thing. I knew nothing about the progression of this disease. I'm talking about, you know, wanting to be down. You know, that's the era I come from. I was raised in Harlem. I came from the era of wanting to be down, if anybody can identify with that. So what I did is, before I went to school, I got a pack of cigarettes, not even a pack, because they were selling Lucy's then, and I would practice, let me blow it out my nose, make a circle, all of that, because in order to be down, I had to be able to do that when I got in the girls' bathroom, you know, or you don't get no HO cards, you're not hanging out, you know. So all of my character defects and all of the things that dictated my behavior patterns was based on me wanting to be down, and it all is attributed to my low self-esteem. When I grew up, I was the darkest child on my block. And they had a nickname for me. They used to call me Blackie, which did nothing for my self-esteem, you know. There was 11 of us in the family, and I wore what you called hand-me-down clothes. So nothing ever fit. Thank God today stuff fit. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But what happened is that they used to hand clothes down to me, and I would have to go to school and wear those clothes, you know, and just try to fit in and be a part like everybody else, you know. So now I'm thinking I'm too black, too ugly, hand-me-down clothes, and my self-esteem really suffered, you know. The thing that kept me above all of that was because I was a very intelligent child, and I was always in special classes, IG classes, SP classes, you know. I could do the homework. By the time the teacher put it on the board, I had it done before I left school. You understand what I'm saying? And then I came from the era where they started busing you to school, so I would get bused from 118th Street, Lenox Avenue, if you know the block, and they'd send me downtown to 54th Street. And I remember the first trip on the bus, when we went past Central Park, right, I never saw a horse and a buggy before. I was like, oh, shoot, the horse, the buggy, you know. I bugged out with that, you know. But I want to get back to my user because I don't want to get far off base in talking about character defects. And the progression of this disease went from me just putting ashes in beer to get a buzz. That's where I started at. Smoking cigarettes, ashes in the beer to get a buzz, fighting cock. There used to be this, they don't even make that anymore, but it was called fighting cock. And you could get one of them little bottles like that, and about 10 people could get high off of it, right? We would drink that behind the stairs, and I always ran with a gang, you know, the Kelly Streets, to this, to that, you know. And we would go in and turn the party out. We only got buzzed up so we could go in and turn the party out. You know, back then they had different kind of parties. You know, waistline parties, you know, whatever your waist was, you paid that little 19 cent, 20 cent to get in the party. You know, they had pay to rent parties. You know, they had those kind of parties when I was coming up. And it went from that to pitching in 10 cents, 25 cents, you know, to buy this bag of reefer, you know, that all of us got high off. We got about 20 joints in that shit, you know. And I remember on my 29th birthday, I got introduced to cocaine. And I drove on the Grand Concourse in the Bronx all the way from 174th Street all the way to the end, which is up near, past Gun Hill, near Gun Hill Road, on the wrong side of the street. So I had an allergic reaction, you know, from the very beginning. From there, the progression set in, and I found myself in after-hour spots. I went in on Thursday, and I came out maybe on Sunday. I went in little places, and I'm talking about, I was a person that was in the construction industry, okay? From the time that I was 17 and a half, I strapped up every day. I put on a bulletproof vest every day. I had a boot gun, you know, I had Uzis in the car. This is the kind of lifestyle that I lived. I wound up in after-hour spots. I could not get out of the after-hour spot to even sign paychecks. I had them brought to me in the after-hour spot. I'm the type of person that would go to after-hour spot. I'd have clothes made, you know, to wear out for the weekend, and I would pee on them every single time that I got high. As soon as I took a hit, I got froze up, you know. And as a result, right, what would happen to me is that I would start hearing voices with that cocaine psychosis, thinking people was talking about me and all that kind of stuff. So I got into a lot of stuff. My arrogance was overbearing, you know. Today I could say that that character defect has been arrested just for the day, you know. Self-righteous behavior, thinking that everybody need to do stuff like I do stuff, you know. And it's as a result, it's really as a result of doing step work and being in the program that these character defects are arrested a day at a time. My character defects is kind of like my disease was when it was active. You understand what I'm saying? When I was active, my disease used to say, you're the baddest bitch in the world. You understand what I'm saying? I put on a little gold spoon on my neck, had the little gold pinky and everything, had the big car because I was not only addicted to the drug, I was addicted to the lifestyle. So I had to have a big Beamer, Mercedes or whatever, triple park it, go in there, you know, the whole nine yards. You understand what I'm saying? And my character defects are similar to like when I was using. You understand what I'm saying? And it was the high cost of low living. It was the high cost of low living. You know, my character defects wears masks. You understand what I'm saying? I didn't know nothing about a mask, but I was wearing a mask when I got here. I was wearing a mask all through my addiction from the time that I was 13. I got clean when I was 40. I got clean February 3rd, 1993. I was 40 years old. You know, I came from a place where I made 100 grand every year. You know, thank God that, you know, I lost everything. When I got out of the business that I was in, I think that was, I was starting to hit my bottom. I was in a business, you know, that was mafioso controlled, and they were trying to take me out of here, and they left me in my own blood. My arms broke, my legs was broke, and they had split my head wide open. They thought I was going to die. But God had another plan for me, you know, and I want to really introduce God into this step. You know, and God needs no introduction, but without a higher power, you have no ability to surrender to nothing. You understand what I'm saying? All the time that I was using it in them after hour spots, all the time that I was running around with guns and doing all that stuff, all the time when my son was in the room while I was getting high, all the time when I was sniffing coke until my nose bled, you understand what I'm saying? Against all odds, I was able to find the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous through the God of my understanding. See, God was looking out for me way before I knew anything about it, because my prayers had now been reduced to, please, God, just let me get out of this one. You understand what I'm saying? I would lay in my bed and write Dear God letters after everything was gone. See, I'm the type of addict that in the beginning when I started out, I was like, test that because I'm not sniffing no cut. You know, but in the end, I was copping little dimes that I didn't even know whether it was cocaine or not. I was sniffing sand. You understand what I'm saying? I'm the type of addict that would sit in my house and say, look at all of them crackheads running up and down the street. And in the end, that's what I was doing, running up and down the street. You know, so they say, they don't care what, who you caught from, how little or how much you use, because I wasn't doing crack. I was doing cocaine, and I was doing the same thing. My runs was butt-ass naked, put on a trench coat. I didn't care if it was winter, summer, spring, or fall, and go outside and make that run. And I might have $100, but I'm only copping a dime. Then when I go back home, I'm in there for about 10 minutes, and I make that same run again. Give me a dime, you know. And never, ever, never, ever had I had to go to the welfare before until I was 40. I was 40 years old. I was 40 years old when I first went to the welfare, and this was before I got clean. And I remember saying, I ain't gonna use, I'm gonna pay all the bills, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do that, you know. And I dressed up to go to the welfare, and I went over to the welfare, and they gave me the picture card and everything, and they said, and, you know, in 45 days, you're gonna have $68 and blah, blah, blah. And soon as I came out of the place where I got the ID card, I went right to the check cashing place and said, swipe this and see if there's any money in there, you know. I want what I want when I want it, you know. Always, always, always looking for instant gratification, you know. In this step, they talk about the willingness to do something different, you know, that do the right thing for the right reason, even when it don't feel comfortable, you know. Today, I'm practicing saying no when I want to say yes. It's some stuff that I want to say yes to, you know, because of my dis-ease with myself. You understand? Because of that hole that I have in my gut, because I removed myself from help. That's what happened to me. I've been clean for 14 years. The last 2 years, I haven't been making meetings on a regular basis. I just started these last couple of months running the meetings, you know, yeah, to save my ass. You understand what I'm saying? Because complacency set in. You understand? If you hear and you think that money could keep you clean, please, please keep coming. You know, if you hear and you think that degrees can keep you clean, please keep coming. See, because I came into this fellowship with a high school equivalency diploma. In 3 years, I had a bachelor's degree. The next year, I had a master's degree. The next year, I had a master's degree in public administration. And the next year, I got a degree in clinical supervision. So if I'm the master at the game on the outside of this, why do I need to come to this? I'm writing programs. Why do I need to come to this? So I need to understand that this is separate. You understand? That mask that I wear, that corporate look that I wear, that, you know, that suit that I put on every day, that's for what I do in society. And the symbol, they talk about it. Self, service, society, and God. And they didn't say you could pick and choose. They said you have to have all of that to reach the point of freedom. So my character defects mask themselves even when I'm amongst y'all. You see, I isolated in my active addiction even in the after hour spot. I have isolated and been in the rooms while y'all are sharing and my head be somewhere else. So my disease wants to alienate me from help so that I will not get help with my character defects, that I will continue to act out. I will continue to do the wrong thing. And just like I didn't know I had a problem in the beginning with the drugs, I don't know I have a problem with the character defects until something happens and I reach bottom. It was 2 months ago. It was 2 months. That's how I ran my ass back to the meeting, right? I was going to the hairdresser. Yeah, I was going to the hairdresser, and against my own will, without my permission, the car drove me to the casino. Now, I told you about the runs that I had in active addiction. When I went to the casino, right, I had $89 in my pocket. Had no plans to go to the casino. They opened up a new casino by my house in Westchester, right? Car just drove me there. I get in there, and it's just like the damn spot. You know, I lost the $89. Got my ATM card, and just like I kept running back and forth, the cop, ching, ching, ATM. No, do I pull out $500 at a time? You here to gamble. Pull out what you going to gamble. No, I went $100 at a time. Ching, ching, ching. Ching, ching, ching. Ching, ching, ching. I'm talking about the disease of addiction. And I need to know how the disease of addiction plays a part in my character defects, because they're two very separate things. But they play a part, you know, the disease of addiction plays a part in your character defects, because it causes me to act out in ways that I wouldn't normally act out because of this addiction. So if you hear and you think that you're different from me, or my friend John, right, that you could go gambling, and you have said that you are an addict, please let me share this information with you, that you cannot go into a casino and have a recreational day and gamble. And the progression may not kick in on your first visit, because this is a cunning disease. I told you this disease told me I was the shit when I was using. And I looked at them pictures when I was using, and I tore them motherfuckers up. And now that I'm in recovery, and I feel like I'm doing the right thing, I have some successes. You know, a lot of my character defects have been arrested, because shit used to happen to me, I would pistol whip your ass. You understand what I'm saying? Today, my house has no pistols in it that I trust in a loving God that I'll be okay. You understand? When I'm on my job, I do not act out. I do not take you in my office and yoke you up when you do something. You understand what I'm saying? I do supervision with you. You understand what I'm saying? So the program has a way of molding us into a better character if we are willing to take that step. Or if we stay in the mode of I want when I want it, then we don't recover. Then we don't recover. We continue to act out until we hit bottom, bottom, bottom. My disease is a manipulator just like me. You understand what I'm saying? My disease is a manipulator just like me. One is too many and 1,000 is never enough. I tell you, I write programs, but I'm always writing something. There's always a line that's missing. It's the line that you don't see where my character defect is most active. You understand what I'm saying? I tell you, I come from an environment where I had 100 grand or more every year. So I'm used to a certain lifestyle, and when it don't come one way, I try to find another avenue, finding ways and means to use. You know, I'm grateful to be clean. I just recently got a new sponsor, you know, so I'm back on the first step, you know, right in the first step, you know. I remember all the step work I did with people that I sponsored, because I sponsored so many people. And I want to tell you about this really glaring character defect and how the disease really played me out of pocket before I stopped making meetings. What I did is I gradually said, you know, we recover at different rates. I started telling my sponsees, look, I've been sponsoring your ass for 9 or 10 years. You don't do no work. You're waking my ass up 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning with that same bullshit. You know, you want to be with him, but you don't want to be with him. If you want to be with him, then just, you know, deal with it. And, you know, and I cut their ass loose. Y'all don't want to do no step work, I'm cutting your ass loose. Y'all not going to run me in the hole because I'm not no martyr. You understand? But that was all part of the master plan to isolate myself from help, because sponsorship was a two-way street for me. You understand what I'm saying? And that's what kept me whole and grounded in the program, because I had to be there for them. By helping somebody else, you actually helping yourself. You know, and who was I? Who was I, the one that hit bottom, that looked in the mirror one day and didn't even see her own face? All I saw was the pain and suffering, and I was ready to surrender. And this is a surrender step. This is a surrender step to have the willingness to do something different. You understand what I'm saying? You come from the open-mindedness part of the step to the willingness to try to do something different. You know, my biggest character defect is self-sufficiency. I'm self-sufficient. One of them comedians be saying, I forget her name, but she be saying, you know, all of y'all women are just saying, I don't need no man to take care of me. She said, damn, that shit, I need somebody to take care of me. Well, I need somebody to take care of me too, you know, and I am not unique, and I need to follow the program like everybody else. You understand what I'm saying? So I've been calling my sponsor every day. You know, I was going for a new job, and the little disease said to me, girl, you got 14 years. You don't call your sponsor talk about you going no interview. What kind of shit is that? You ain't got 1 year. And immediately, I picked up the phone because I had to go back to the basics, and I remember what they said. When you don't want to go to a meeting, that's when you need to be going. And I called my sponsor to tell her, hey, I'm going to get a new job, you know. And I'm grateful that, you know, I have that kind of support around me, you know, and I have good people in my life, you know. I've had the opportunity, you know, over the 14 years, you know, to see other people's character defects, to see my own, and to have empathy for other people, because I know how my character defects drag me. See, because when I get locked and loaded, you know, part of this disease of addiction is about obsessive and compulsive behavior. Once I get locked and loaded, I don't let go. You understand what I'm saying? I do not let go, you know, and I've had the opportunity, you know, to be dragged by this disease over the 14 years. You know, I'm talking about obsession with, I'm obsessed with school. Y'all already know that. I just told y'all what happened, you know, so I'll be looking for something to register for come September. You understand what I'm saying? But that's a good thing, you know, my obsession with people. Yeah. Obsession with food, money, clothes. I don't have it all. You understand what I'm saying? But today I'm glad that I'm able to recognize when my disease is active, you know. And, you know, I know this is the sixth step, but in the first step, they say you got to get that first step right, you know, because in the first step, it helps you start to identify patterns, you know, when your disease is active, that you know when your disease is active, you know. Like I had that little tweaking in me, you know, since that time I went to the casino. And I know I was going to play Texas Hold'em. You know I was invited already to the card game, right? And I told somebody about it, you know, and a week went by. And then I told them, and the next day was the Texas Hold'em game. And I went to the meeting, and I showed my face, and I had the mask on, and I went to the Texas Hold'em game. You know, I went to the Texas Hold'em game because what I did is I said, this is not the casino. You understand what I'm saying? Rationalizing. You know, gambling is gambling. A drug is a drug, you know. And I went, and I didn't feel bad about it because I didn't lose the same $600 I lost when I went to the casino, you know. It was just the feeling associated with being on a run like that, you know. And I shared this before, and I hate sharing this, but the first idea, they said we sick as our secrets, right? When I lost my money, right? What happened at this casino is they shut down at 2 o'clock, and a little like cash register receipt comes out to say how much money you have. Now I invested $600, so a little receipt came, and I had $27, and then everything shuts down. There's no crap table where you can like, you know, try to get your money back or none of that on one roll or nothing. There's none of that. They printed out a little receipt. So as I was going to get my $27 up to the window, right, I was looking at the people that had a lot of receipts, right? And now, I ain't never been no stick-up person or nothing like that, but I was like, I should stick their ass up when they get in the parking lot and go home. Just for a thought, that thought just flashed across my head. You understand what I'm saying? But that was not the problem. You understand what I'm saying? The problem was me. It begins and ends with me. And it's all about what am I willing to do, you know. And when I was using, I chased that drug. You understand what I'm saying? I did what I had to do to use. I used for weddings, funerals. I used if you use, whatever. They used to always be on the phone. When you coming? When you? I didn't go out until like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. Because once I took a hit, you know, I was all engulfed in that, you know. The only way that I had to get out is, you know, that must have been gone, you know. They kept, you know, calling and calling for me to come. But I was like, you know, focused and obsessed with using. You know, I was not, you know, in tune with what is going on with you. You could tell me something. Oh, so-and-so died. Could you go with me to the funeral? The only thing I was thinking about is what are we going to have to get high? When people go to funerals, they be drinking and getting high. You understand? When they go to weddings, they drinking and getting high. You know, today, I don't have to do that. Oh, I'm running out of time. I'm glad to be clean today, you know. I'm glad that there is a 12-step process, you know, for me to practice the principles of recovery, you know. See, because this is not about being intellectual. It's about practicing the spiritual principles of the program, you know. And anybody, any addict, right, with the ability to get honest, can recover. Any addict with the ability to get honest can recover. So, you know, in closing, I just want to say, you know, today and yesterday and hopefully tomorrow, I will continue to surrender on a daily basis my will and let God's will be done. Thanks for letting me share.
My name is John. I'm an addict.
Give me that
in an hour. Nah, just kidding.
Natalie, thank you. You was wonderful. I got to read this again? It's okay, hand me my glasses.
This is some bullshit here. No, I'm just
kidding. This is what I said the last time we got this convention, right, Nick? Got to read the speaker's statement twice. Y'all forgot it?
I did.
Right, Omar. The NA member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the NA program of recovery, which is the 12 steps and 12 traditions. In areas where there's not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time, and you know what? We don't even experience that no more in Narcotics Anonymous. We got some clean time around here now, right? All over. Or, sorry, I didn't mean to ad lib. You know, I gotta be who I am. That's my defect. There's a possibility that a group experiencing Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our active addiction or war stories, because we all know what it was like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we're here to share our experience, strength, and hope of recovery. Again, my name is John. I'm an addict. Natalie, you was wonderful. Thank you so much for being a part of my life. And that casino, that ain't no casino. That's a rip-up spot. Anyway, I get into that. I'm going to talk about my defects. That's what I'm here for. And I sure have a whole bunch of them. But I'm going to tell you the pressure that I'm under right now. I'm under some extreme pressure, but thank God for God. Because when I came in here, a brother came over to me, man, and lifted my spirits. First, I'm just so happy to be here because my sponsor and my good friend, Farrakhan, is speaking at the banquet tonight. A wonderful opportunity. A wonderful opportunity. I got a chance to come up and ride up here with not only him and following his call with Gail, my wife Debbie, and my good friend Ron, other sponsee and good friend. But we get to stay tomorrow to hear my good friend Nathaniel speak at the spiritual meeting tomorrow morning. So this is going to be a great weekend, right? Starting from now. But what had happened was I got a lot of issues coming up. I got a lot of situations that happened to me. So when I got here, I needed some love. And I came through the door, and who else to give you love but Jim P? What else kind, what other kind of, I mean, a genuine hug from a brother that I really respect and admire. That have like, you know, sometimes your predecessors might have less clean time than you. They might have had to proceed to do some work in some areas that you needed to work on. And I realized I needed a lot of help when I got here from people that came in and back of me. My clean date is August 23rd, 1982. So that gives me 24 and a half years clean. Y'all can clap. We clap in New York, yeah. Listen, I was getting ready to blow up your 14 years, but I said I'll wait for mine, right? Yeah, you better clap for clean time. If you don't clap for your own clean time, ain't nobody going to do it. Because you notice, when I'm starting to spit, you might want to slide your chair over a little bit. I noticed that if I didn't clap just now, nobody else is going to clap. So I got to clap. At least I'm pleasing me. See, you can't please everybody in Narcotics Anonymous. There's always going to be somebody that's not pleased. But they said, if try pleasing you, at least one person is pleased. And thank God I've tried to stick on that. So when Jim P gave me that hug, I came in here and I was talking to Lorraine at the programming, right? And her husband was sitting, well, not at that point, right? But I was talking to her and we was just talking. And then a good friend came over to me, man, Gary, and brought up my spirit. Because I had been sick all week. I had been out of work all week. I had a stomach virus. So I was throwing up and going to the bathroom at the same time. Throwing up, I hate to bring that up. I'm 53 years old and I can't talk about shitting yet. You know what I mean? It's still uncomfortable to me, right? But I was poo-pooing at the same time. So anyway, well, at least I didn't do it in the car like you. Or you. But anyway, the bottom line is this, right? That I was sick all week, and my wife was saying, listen, you sick all week, you ain't go to work, but I'm getting paid. Thank you, Natalie, for helping with that job, too. But I'm getting paid, right? I'm getting paid for staying off of work, so it means I got some sick time. That's what you do when you get sick. If you have benefits, you get your sick time, you collect it, you stay home and recover with my wife and my little dog who I had to walk regardless whether I was sick or not, right? So my spirit wasn't up. And I called Ann and I talked to Farrakhan all week and we talk, right? And for some reason, God, when I got here, my spirit got better. Because Gary, man, thank you for giving me that inspiration, man. And thank you, man, for telling me I was your favorite speaker in Narcotics Anonymous. I wish you would pass that around to the other 170 conventions. They'll go on tour together. But anyway, you know, the bottom line is this, right? That you can get sick in here and get feel physically better while sitting in the meeting. Like Natalie said, I asked her, was she nervous? She said, this is just like another meeting. And absolutely, but we're here to celebrate recovery. We're here to bring up our best spirit so to motivate you and to fan your desire to work on your 6 and 7 step. We're here to fan your desire to continue to come no matter what whatever your defect may be. Because I know my defect runs deep because I wore many masks And I found out in my fourth step. Because even from day one, I was born. My mother was a light-skinned black. She almost looked white. And my father was dark as the night. And I came out looking like this. I hang out with the whites. They call me black. I hang out with the blacks. They call me white. I hang out with the Puerto Ricans. They speak Spanish to me. And I was all fucked up. I didn't know where I belonged. So it was from day one I wore a mask. And the mask just started compiling because I was uncomfortable in my own skin. I know some of you could identify what I'm talking about. That's why we said we don't compare. We identify. So when Natalie was up here talking about they called her black, I just identified with that because they called me the same thing on the reverse. So the bottom line is this. Please keep coming here. You might not hear your identical story, but you'll hear something that you could definitely identify with. And identify with the fact that I felt uncomfortable in my own skin long before I came to Narcotics Anonymous, and the mask ran deep because the more I put on a mask, and we just had Atlantic City last week, not at the casino, at the convention, right? Well, the casino's another story. But anyway, but what happened is in Atlantic City last week, Shan, on The Mask Must Go. And I know I developed masks because it had to make, I was uncomfortable in my own skin. So in order for me to just get past, I put on a mask on top of a mask. And then I heard my man in Detroit, Shan, about it. And I think I was telling Billy last week about it, that not only did I put a mask on top of the mask, I put paint on top of the mask. So now my defects are running so deep, I don't know who really is me when the mask come off. So I got a whole lot of peeling of the onion. And I had to realize, I had to come down all the way down to realize in my fourth step that my root was, I don't want to blame my mother for my defects. But I wish I could, because she enabled me all my life. Because I was a sickly kid. I was allergic to everything. Allergies, rashes over 95% of my body up until the age of 13. There was no baby pictures of me. So I was like not a good sight to look at up until the age of 13. I was, always back and forth to the hospital, asthma attacks, and almost died several times. So my mother cuddled me. So now every time I get sick, I want to be cuddled. So I'm on the bathroom floor. I'm calling my wife. She's at work on the phone telling how sick I am. She said, I don't care. You shouldn't have ate all that shit you've been eating. You know you are diabetic. I ain't giving you no sympathy. I said, ain't this a bitch? Thank you, Debbie. I love you. Thank God for dogs. Because I had to throw up. And I went in my bathroom to throw up. And my dog, and laid on the bathroom floor for 2 hours. That was as far as I could reach, right? And my dog laid right next to me, beside me. Man's best friend. If you ain't got a wife. Sometimes if you do got a wife. But the bottom line is that I realized I needed comfort. And it's sometimes that my fourth step tells me a lot, Omar, right? Which I know formally. I'm sorry if I call you Keith. You know we go way back, brother. You know we go way back. Good to see you, man. I love you, man. Yeah. And the bottom line is that, man, sometimes my memory comes back to me. And when my memory hits me here, I'll just go from here to here to here. I'm sorry to take you all over the place. I want to be consistent and precise like the literature. But because I'm a human being, because I don't ad-lib this, because this ain't nothing that I studied, rather, that I might jump around. And I go where the spirit is, wherever the spirit leads me. So that's where I'm at. So I'm up to my point of the fact of dealing with my uncomfortability of not being nurtured in my illness. That I want somebody to hold me. I want somebody to tell me, listen, it's going to be all right. You got a stomach ache? That's all. And my wife got a certain way of telling me she loves me by what she does. See, my wife reminds me so much of my father sometimes because she's responsible. She takes care of the bills. She was with me through the whole situation. I mean, she was with me through when I went to jail clean. That's another story that I'm not going to ad-lib right now, but I'm going to get to it, right? But she has been there for me, stayed with me, and weathered the storm with me. But just like my father sometimes, and she says I don't give it to her, and she probably is right, that I could come in here, listen what I'm saying, a defect, and hug everybody in here and tell you I love you. And mean it. I might have met the guy that just came in for the first time, a killer from the streets, might have raped some kids last night. Say, welcome, your seat is on us. We don't deny you the seat in Narcotics Anonymous. Hug you and tell you I love you and mean it. But can't go home and hug my wife or my mother and father. I don't know if anybody could identify what I'm talking about. But I know that the pain and the misery goes with that. Is that if I want to get it, I got to give it. So I was in Brooklyn. And they taught me, they gave me an assignment. That's why going to meetings is so important. They gave me an assignment. They said, listen, John, today when you leave the meeting, go home and hug your father. Go to his house, because I wasn't living with my father no more. I moved out. Thank God I grew up a little bit in Narcotics Anonymous. And I went to hug him, and I realized my father, see, you could only take care, you know, I know I could only clean my side of the street. I know that I can't clean nobody else's side of the street. And I know that I went home that day. I went to Brooklyn. I got love from Brooklyn. They inspired me to go home and hug my father. And I grabbed him and told him I loved him. I grabbed and I hugged him Thanksgiving Day and told him I loved him. And he was uncomfortable. He's like, get off me, boy. You know I don't play that shit. Because he was uncomfortable. Because he never got that either. So we learned to bring what we learned in here to bring it home. You know, I'm that kind of character now that I have to practice some stuff over and over again, right, Dave? I got to sometimes my head hit the wall 10 times before I correct it. But thank God I got people in my life that tolerate me, that are able to say, listen, John, yeah, you're right this time, but you ain't right. Yeah, I was having a problem on my job, right? I was going to the job and I was telling them, listen, okay, do this, this, and this. And they were and it was pissed off at me because they said, you always think you know what you're talking about. Self-righteousness, what Natalie talked about. It talked about it right here. I tried to dirty up my books a little so it looked like, whose books are these? Ron H's? I try to get with Ron H. It ain't going. I got to still keep growing. But he talks about it. Damn, I done fucked up. That was a good one for me, too. Self-righteousness. Take a defect such as self-righteousness. For example, that's just an example. And imagine it in its normal, uninflated state. Confident belief in one's own values. So we're confident in our thinking. Or I was. Strong, confident, and well-rounded people have formed values and principles to live by and believe deeply in their rightness. So a lot of times I believe in my rightness because of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm clean today. So I feel I'm doing all right. But then such people live what they believe and share those beliefs with others in a non-critical way when asked. Confidence in our beliefs is essential. Without it, we would be wishy-washy. So I gotta be positive. My beliefs are essential. Because without it, I'd be wishy-washy. And it says, unsure of our decisions and probably somewhat immature in our dealings with the world. I don't want to be immature with my dealings with the world. But it says confident belief becomes ugly. And it's ugly, self-righteousness. When we insist that others live by our values. Yeah, I've done some injustices in here and expected other people to live by my values. Because I want them to respond the way I want them to respond. They got to respond the way God has them respond. There's some friends that have been in some situations I don't say is worse than my situation because I'm the only one living in my shoes. So everybody's situation probably is their worst situation. So I can't say, well, John K. been through a whole lot of shit. He done been to jail. He done committed suicide, wanted to commit suicide. He done did this, did that, you know. But my situation is worse. Yeah, because you the one got to live through it. So my thinking is, how dare I, me, be so self-righteous to think that you're supposed to live by the way I want you to live. So God gives me a right to help pray for that person. See, resentments is a part of the sixth step that we cannot afford to have. Resentments, they say, is like peeing on yourself. Sometimes it's like 10 people peeing on you and only you feel it. And the other person just walking scot-free. Listen, there's a point where it comes in my household that I want to be a better person. That's what I'm here for. I'm here to share my experience, strength, and hope and love for Narcotics Anonymous to tell you that I humbly ask God. I humbly, on a daily basis, ask God to help me get out my way. Because I know my defects are something that helped me to survive all these years. My comedian ways, this is who I am. I know that's who I am. But they are my survival skills. The way I love is not a unique way, because other people love the same way, and that's hard. But I make sure I want to give because I want to receive. I want to be able to be there for somebody else and have them be there for me. But I'm willing to take the risk that if I'm not there, you might not be there for me, because you can't be everywhere. Can you take the risk? Are you scared not to show up? And figure if you don't show up, oh, that's it. My name is Mud. I'm never going to be asked to come again. Sometimes you got to say no. I realized I had to say no. I had to step back and I had to, you know, reevaluate my situation. And my situation is thus, listen, when I got married, I realized that, you know, I wanted to make a commitment. I was tired of living the lifestyle of a single person. Meanwhile, I was married anyway, living with the person. So we got married. Thank you. And the bottom line is that I wear the pants in my house. I always have the last things to say at night. Every night. It's a man's world. Always have the last two words to say. Yes, dear. I know how to stay out of trouble. I ain't stupid. Y'all gonna say, oh shit, he going home by himself this week. Gotcha. But listen, there comes a point though that I came in this fellowship with two balls. Sometimes marriage means stepping back and losing one of your balls. Excuse my French. So I found out that I was trying to give more so I could work out my marriage. And we would argue on a lot of things, but this one day, I remember this one day, that I said, listen, I'm going to the, no, you know what she said? I need you to go to the store. She said, go to the store and give me some, what was that? No, hell no. You said adobo. She said, go to the store and give me some adobo. She thought she said sasson. I got to the store because I knew it was going to be some problems, Reggie, and made sure that I wouldn't have no problems. So when I got to the store, I got all different three kinds of adobos. One with garlic, one red pepper, you know, and one straight up joint. And I said, this is going to be good. Now I got the adobo. Ain't nothing could happen. I go home. I eat. Everything is lovely. I bring it home. She said, what the fuck is this? She said, I asked for Sassoon. I said, no, you might have thought you said Sassoon. You said adobo because I asked her like 3 times. And she picked it up. And now, you know, wives or women in general or people overall that like to throw shit will just throw it. They don't look at price tags on what they're throwing. She'll pick up a TV if she can pick it up and throw it. But this day, she took the adobo, this red one, right? And threw it all over the green carpet. I was like, and I'm normally, I back up. I never, you know, I'm not physical like that because I know where it could lead. I just did a year of weekends in Rikers Island. So I'm saying, pick it up. She said, I ain't picking shit up. So then all of a sudden I started getting ready to throw some shit out. You know, I looked at price tags because I ain't doing that well financially, right? So I can't afford to replace shit. So I picked up some stuff like this, styrofoam, right? And I started throwing it at her. So if it missed, it didn't hurt nothing, right? And that was it. I got my frustration off, right? But meanwhile, I said, vacuum that shit up. She said, I ain't vacuuming nothing up. I said, yeah, you vacuum that up. And after 2 minutes going by, right, you see me with the vacuum cleaner. Lost another ball. All in the theme of recovery. My sixth and seventh step, God humbly give me some balls back. I stand in front of you. I go to my friends. I tell my friends, listen. They say, oh, you good. Your wife love you, but you good. Because I love her. And I love, you know, because I understand that coming to conventions sometimes, when you're, sometimes people know you when you walk in the door. Because I have a history in Narcotics Anonymous. A history. It all ain't a sweet picture. I wish I could have wrote the story different. Maybe I'd have made Goodfellas. Oh, what was that you was on? So, he said, don't worry about it, The Sopranos. Oh, no, shucks, The Sopranos. So I'm saying, right? I would have wrote a better script. But what better script to write than the script that God has given me and led me to give me some spirit back. Give me some integrity. Let me know, listen, man, you can love people. I mean, we have worked so hard in this fellowship, man. I remember me and Natalie, we used to go and like get involved in committees. And Willie, man, you remember. You know, and get down and busy and helping and trying to serve the fellowship and do some things that was creative. And God has put me in place that when I needed y'all, y'all appeared. And this is the time of my life when I need y'all. I need Narcotics Anonymous. August, I'm looking to celebrate 25 years. I don't look, yeah, my man Gary, first to clap, see? Yeah, boy, my man. We going. What convention next, Gary? That's right. Start practicing now, brother. I hope you taping this. You didn't cut it off right now. But listen, I say anything up here because I ain't trying to impress nobody. I ain't trying to get your approval. I am not, for the first time in my life, trying to be who you want me to be. That's a really freedom. Thank you, man. Freedom. And it's good to be free, man. It's good to be able to be up even with your friends when you know they going through some stuff and you know you haven't maybe connected with them to tell them, you know, I love you, man. I love you, Nate, man. There's some things we go through. Sometimes we need this atmosphere. To just get to another level, to the other side. You know, and God has been good to me, man. Natalie, man, you know, I'm so glad to see you around Narcotics Anonymous. You've given a lot to this fellowship. You've written out a lot of programs for NA, our group history that you wrote your name in. And that's right, because you was there. You know, so we need that. I need my wife to tell me she loved me, and I need to tell her I love you. I know you do. Listen. Look, look. I ain't got nothing to say after that. I'm gonna tell you this. It feels good having my balls back. Listen, if you're here and you're new, this is a wonderful fellowship. Please stay here. Please enjoy the fruits of the labor. Because we work hard in here. Sometimes we look like we're floating on the outside, but we're really paddling heavy underneath just to stay above board. Liz and Mary, I love y'all, man. Thanks for hanging out with us. That's right. Because we got a crew, man, that we don't, no matter what. No matter what we don't use, we continue to, like, persevere. So if you're here today and nobody told you they love you, I love you. If the people around you didn't say I love you, don't worry about it. Maybe you need to tell them you love them. Thank you for letting me share. Yeah.